Today's conference is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IRD call on Monday, the 8th of August. We have Samad Hussain, Rafik Damak, Scott Orson, Steve Metallitz, Jim Galvin. From staff, we have Steve Sheng, Dave Fiscostello, Julie Headland, and myself, Gisela Gruber. And apologies today noted from Alfred Doria. If I could please also just remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Julie.
Thank you very much, Gisela. And so on this call, we are going to continue with a discussion of the extended draft outline I sent around earlier today. The latest version, note that we did actually get through the discussion, through the findings, I think, of last week, and we're now starting on the recommendations. And so we'll start from that section, which is labeled Section 4 in the document that I put around, although I think since the findings section is labeled 4 also, that probably will have to be changed to Section 5. But in any case, we're starting with the recommendations, I believe. And the recommendations start, if you're looking at the document, on page 8. So I think I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Steve, if you want to start there.
Thank you, Julie, and good morning and good evening, everyone. I noticed that Dr. Samad Hussain is on the call, and we have been going through this draft outline. And Dr. Hussain, since you were on earlier calls, I would appreciate if you have any comments of the previous sections up to Section 4. You could comment on the document, either send it to me or send it to the list. Actually, I prefer you send it to the list, so that way we have captured some comments.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, thank you. For those of you who have been on the call, we've been going through findings, and I think we are almost done with findings, but not quite. We are at Section 4.2, the second bullet. At our last meeting, we had some discussions. Steve Metallitz raised some points about the first sub-bullet on Section 4.1 regarding there may be some solutions exist today to accommodate monolingual users. And his comment is to list these solutions, and which we'll do in the final report. For the interest of time, let's move on to second bullet. I would like to ask if participants on the call have any comments on this bullet. It reads, at a minimum, the current WHOIS data needs to be tagged with language script. There's a RFC 4646, which I believe was Mark Davis from Google, was one of the authors, that have a tag that both indicate the language and the script. So with that, I would like to open up the floor for discussion on this bullet point. Thanks.
I have a question. This is Samad.
Go ahead.
So are we requesting language or script, or language and script?
So the RFC has there are different ways of tagging, and one way in that RFC it tags both the language and the script. So, for example, in the in the Chinese case, you can identify the language as being Chinese, and you can tag whether it's simplified Chinese or traditional Chinese. So there are unique combinations there. Thanks.
I was actually thinking the other way around, where actually the same data may be valid in more than one languages, which are using the same script.
Same data might be. Could you give me an example?
So if I write a string, that may actually be valid in Persian and Arabic, both written in Arabic script.
Yes.
So in that case, would it be just arbitrarily based on user's choice on which language he or she would select?
In that case, wouldn't it be necessary to tag the language? So let me ask this question, I think. So what you're saying is you have a string that is in the Arabic script. Since the Persian language as well as the Arabic language, or even Urdu use Arabic script, that string could be valid in all of these three contexts, right?
Right.
And in that case, my question is, in these three contexts, do they have the same meaning? I mean, for example, a string that meant in the Arabic language, like an address or something, does it have a different meaning in the Persian context or in the Urdu context?
Well, so there may be cases where they all mean the same thing as well.
Okay.
So the question is that is this labeling at the discretion of the user?
Oh, you mean whether user provide the label?
Yeah.
I think so, right? So, but that's probably an implementation issue. What I'm envisioning when users submitting this information, there's like a drop-down, for a user to indicate, which language and script that is in. And maybe they're able to do some secondary checks, but I'm not sure.
This is Jim. I have a comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
So, Steve, it occurs to me that the issue that Sarmad is raising goes back to the discussion that you and I were having with, CN Nick and Andrew Sullivan during the ITF. And I hadn't thought about this until just now when Sarmad brought this question up. We have that technical issue of there are times, given the fact that when you have a script, there is a one-to-many mapping from scripts to languages, and there's also one-to-many mapping from languages to scripts. Now, that's not true in all cases. There are clearly cases for which a script is sufficient information to know everything, and there are cases where knowing the language is sufficient. But there are examples, especially in the Devanagari languages, and Arabic is another good example, where because of this one-to-many mapping opportunity, you need both a language and a script in order to accurately identify the data. Let me just pause for a moment and say, I mean, obviously you do remember that discussion, right?
Yes.
And so, and I'm wondering now, as a result of all of that, since we're obviously going to be doing some other things in the ITF to fix that issue in EPP, we probably should say something here about all of that, too, since we now have this technical issue that we know about. I mean, I have some Devanagari examples that I can give you, and Sarmad probably has some Arabic examples that he can provide that would justify the observation and simply, knowing that you need both a language and a script.
Sure, Jim. I think if you and Dr. Sarmad can provide some examples and to drive this point home, that would be great. I think that would be a wonderful addition to the report.
So, Sarmad, does that speak to the issue that you're raising?
Sure. I think what I'm also suggesting is that if we are asking the users to provide this information, we should make that probably more specific or clear. It doesn't really say where this information is coming from.
Okay. So what I can do, let me see.
I think what's interesting here, so this is Jim again speaking, is that I don't know that we want to be specific about the fact that a user has to provide that information. I think it's sufficient for us to observe that the registration data needs to be tagged in this way. I mean, in point of fact, the data could actually come formally from multiple places. I mean, a user might provide it, but a user would only provide it if a particular registrar, if in the presence of a registrar, offered multiple choices, if they offered multiple languages or multiple scripts to their particular user community, then a user would obviously have to have some input into that, either directly or indirectly. But it's also possible that a registrar that only serves a singular community with a singular script or language, they would know the answer, and they could simply fill that in to pass it up to the registry. It's also possible that a registry might be only in a particular community for a particular country or something else like the gtld.cat, which serves Catalonians. They would implicitly know and only expect things in a certain way. So I don't think we want to specify where the data comes from. We should stick to saying that the registration data, who is data as it's stated here, needs to be tagged with both.
This is Scott Austin. Can I just ask a question? In looking at some of the information on the various, on the RFC 4646, I just wondered, has there been any reference, or do we need to make any reference to case sensitivity, whether these scripts should be uppercase, title case, or lowercase?
In general, case sensitivity only applies to Latin-based script. So in general, we don't speak about case sensitivity when talking about IDNs. We leave that as a special case to be dealt with in those scripts for which it matters.
No, but for registration data, where they're entering addresses and things like street names and things like that.
Again, only applies in Latin-based scripts. You're presuming that the registration data is going to be in a Latin-based script.
Okay. I just saw something in the language subtag registries being in uppercase versus other subtags being in lowercase. And, again, I just didn't know if that made any difference in these scripts.
Hello, this is Steve. So the RFC 4646 can tag both at the language and the script level. You can also further tag in the region, variant, extension, and other uses. So I think it's good to call out that both language and script needs to be tagged, but I think for our purposes, RFC 4646 is probably sufficient, tagging both the language and the script. I'm willing to be corrected if so. Okay, so am I correct in observing that there is an action item that Jim and Dr. Samard will provide some Devanagari and Arabic samples to drive this point clear and home? Is that a correct characterization?
This is Jim. Works for me.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other comments on this section? So I think this there's also a second point here. It says, in addition, the community would benefit from the standard registration data schema, like more of a formal data schema, and it lists the three benefits for this schema. Is this a correct characterization? Is this correct?
So this is Jim. I'm sorry. Did we just change bullets that we're looking at?
Oh, it's the same bullet. it's still at a minimum. The bullet begins with the at a minimum.
Right. So, yeah, but it doesn't. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I was confused.
It's still the same bullet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, never mind. I missed the upper phrase. Sorry.
Maybe perhaps with the addition of the information from Dr. Samard and Jim, we ought to separate this into two so that, you know, we explain one concept clearly instead of, you know, having two together. I can take that as an action item. But, yeah, currently it's still one bullet. Thanks.
Yeah, I like that plan. So other than that, yes, I think we've got what we need here for right now.
Any other comments on this point? Steve? Scott?
No comment. This is Steve. No comment for me.
No, it looks good to me. This is Scott.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to bullet number three. There are recognized There are recognized standards for internationalizing the third bullet. Do we have a comment on that? Basically, this recommendation says, you know, to the extent that the standards we discussed before, those should be followed to the extent possible.
Now, Steve, you call this a recommendation. This is, again, we're just in the findings here. This is just a statement of factual information.
Yes.
This is Bob Hutchinson. I don't know whether it's nitpicky to change the word many to all, but I think it's all. Many of the elements to all of the elements.
So this is Jim. The only reason I said many is because, in my mind, the reason why I would say many versus all, because I think I tend to agree with you, but I've never actually sat down and made that direct comparison to be sure. But I'm just being sensitive to the fact that it's not clear to me we have consensus on what is domain registration data. Well, in fact, I think an assertion is that we don't have consensus on what that is.
There is also another technical issue. It's some of these elements does not have standards yet. So, for example, the email address, there's an EAI working group within IETF, and a standard hasn't been produced. So we can't effectively cite that as a standard. So that's one of the technical reasons for using many instead of using all of them. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. This is Bob again. That clarifies your concerns. I'll leave it that way.
Okay, do we have any comments on this point? Okay, I think that the next few points are very important. this drives to the next couple points deals with the issue of, you know, the contact information, meaning the name and the addresses. And what this does is basically list a couple of the models that we described in the past. You know, I think the goal here is, you know, since we spent a lot of time coming up with these models and examining them, we should not, you know, just throw them away in the final report, but at least list them. So that's where it begins. One key issue is internationalizing contact information. So there are two sub-bullets under here, and I'd like to hear any comments on this point. Thanks.
This is Steve Metallitz. I guess my question is, I just want to be clear on kind of how we got to this point.
Go ahead.
We prepared our interim report. We put
yes.
out these, there are four models, and we asked people to comment on those and provide any other models, and there were
right.
another model brought forward. And now
right.
I see this bolded statement that it's not within the remit of this working group to choose what is the best model. I mean, literally that's true because we couldn't choose it anyway. But are we now saying that what we did on that was kind of out of scope and that you said we're just putting it in here because we've already done the work? Or are we saying that we're not competent to make a recommendation, or are we saying there's no community consensus that would allow us to make a recommendation? I'm just not clear on what we're trying to say here about what we've done in the past in this working group.
That's an excellent question. To some certain extent, I completely agree with your point as well. So let me think here. So we discussed a couple of models, and we couldn't. So the reason I put it here is thinking from a policy development perspective, right? So even if the IRD, this is a joint ESSEC and GNSO working group, it's not a policy-making group, right? So for example, even if we decide on one model, still a policy development process needs to follow to make this into contracts, right? So that's the steps. So we're missing one step here. That's my intention for framing it here. And I think also some of those are really policy questions, like, you know, who's bearing the burden, which party has the is most capable to address this issue in a cost efficient manner. I am not sure this group is the right group, but so that's all I have now. I'm really open to your suggestions on how to make this section and have this general discussion here and what is within the scope of this group and where do we carry. So that's all. Thanks.
So this is Jim. If I can comment here, I'm going to have to drop off here after this. But speaking as chair, the way that I approach this, I think there's some tweaking that we can do on the words here, Steve. I think that the last thing that you said, which is that we were not able to come to consensus, I think is the most important point that we somehow need to fold into the fuller text that we develop that goes around these points. Steve is right. It would not be our place ultimately to say, you know, what should or shouldn't happen, although we could make a strong recommendation about what we think is the right answer if we were able to come to consensus. And we had developed these models. We thought about this problem. We asked the community for input. And from my point of view as chair, I just did not feel comfortable that there was any way to identify a consensus. I don't think that we had one, not even within this group, let alone anything that we got from the community. So I think that we did all of this work, and we clearly understand what the two important issues are in answering the question about these models. And I think it's appropriate for us to document the fact that we had this discussion. We came to these two questions. We can probably find a way in the fuller words when we fill this out just to observe that at least no consensus was forthcoming in our group or in our request for community input. And so, you know, and part of the reason for that, I think, is we don't have a full participation of all of the parties that matter in answering these questions. So I think it's appropriate as a recommendation to push back and say, well, no obvious answer stood out. These are the issues which we clearly identified. You know, we think that the GNSO in particular and the CCNSO also, you know, should create a fuller policy development process with all of the relevant parties to examine these questions in detail and come to a conclusion.
Thank you, Jim. What do others think? Please comment. This is a really important issue.
This is Scott Austin. Can I just ask a question about when we say best model, is model referring back to the information that's provided up to that point? In other words, the bullets, and I'm going to use the circles or the squares in the immediate preceding paragraph. It says several options have been discussed. Is option another word for model?
Yes.
Could we change option to model then, just so that they're reflected,
right.
You know, because it's just very hard to read what we're talking about. And I concur with what Jim just said in terms of, you know, making the lead-in to this a bit more robust so that it's explained that there was no consensus reached, but consensus on what? And if, in terms of, is it selection of the model that there was no consensus reached? So essentially we're just saying, here's some models and here's some good things and bad things about them, but it's not for us to choose. I think that's what I'm hearing, but I just want to make sure.
Thank you. I can change the option to model right now. And, yep. What do others think? Steve, Dr. Samad, Bob, and any others on the line? Please chime in.
Well, this is Steve Ballots. I think Jim has summarized it pretty well. And I'm comfortable saying we didn't reach a consensus, but that we did try to identify some of these options and some of the main questions and attempt to see if there was a consensus. But I'm more comfortable with that than with saying this really wasn't our job, because I think it was our job to try to do this anyway.
Thank you. Dr. Samad, were you going to say something?
Yeah. So I actually had a question. This is something we talked about before, and I'm not sure whether it should be reflected here or not in these list of questions which come after the models. And the question was about who actually would be the owner of this data. And I've heard two or three different variations on this, whether it's a registrant who owns the data, registrar who owns the data, or is it with the registry? And I'm not sure whether it's very clearly specified somewhere. It's probably a more fundamental issue, maybe not directly related to internationalized data, so it may actually not be relevant in this discussion, but I still wanted to raise it at this point for any comments you guys have.
Thank you. Any other comments on this? Go ahead.
Yeah, Steve Metallis, just to respond. I think I recall having this discussion before, and I'm not exactly sure when, but I agree with you, it's a cross-cutting issue and probably not something that should be in our report. One of the problems is there's an ambiguity, I think, in how people use the word own. I think lawyers tend to use that in a legal sense, who has property rights in certain data, and others are using it more in a sense of who is responsible for it, whose job is it to take some steps with regard to the data. So I think it's quite ambiguous, and unless we thought it was essential to confront that in order to do our job, I would suggest that we not raise that issue in this report.
What do others think?
Yeah, this is Scott Austin. I totally agree with Steve's comment about ownership being something that is in the eye of the beholder, and it's very different from a legal standpoint versus a management standpoint.
So I have a follow-up question. So would that have any implication on the five models, considering the five models, so when we are translating or transliterating the data? Would the IP of the data intervene or somehow become involved?
Could you clarify, this is Bob Hutchinson, could you clarify what you mean by the IP
involved?
So meaning that depending on where the ownership of the data is, there may be some implications on who can or cannot transliterate or translate that data.
Thank you.
This is Steve Matassa. Again, I think I would consider that kind of a separate issue, because even if there were, whatever the incidents of ownership are, they can be managed for any of these models. I mean, if the registrant owns the data, then the registrant, but the registrant is not the person responsible for doing transliteration or translation, just to give that example, then, you know, you have to have a provision that makes it clear in the registration agreement that the registrant is giving whoever is responsible for doing translation or translation authority to do that. But in other words, I think it's an implementation question rather than a policy question as to whichever way it turns out in terms of intellectual property rights, it can be managed in mapped to one of these models. I think that's the case. So again, I don't think it's necessary to really identify that as an issue in the internationalized registration data context.
Steve, this is Scott Austin. I just want to raise one other question on this, because I think that what the doctor has mentioned about, or maybe it was you mentioned about, responsibility. I just don't know if anywhere in here we have said whether the registrar or the registry has any kind of a duty to allow this information or provide for one or more of these models in terms of the number of languages they will accept data in terms of IRD, internationalized registration data.
That's a good question. I don't know enough to answer that. Jim, what do you think, since you may have a registry perspective on this? I presume the registry would accept whatever registrars is willing to accept, right? Unless, I don't know otherwise. Jim? I think we may have lost Jim.
Yeah, I just didn't know if it had been discussed in this group before, and if it's sort of a funneling, and by that I mean that registrants may come from 150 different languages, and I don't know how that translates into scripts. Maybe it's 50 different scripts, and then registrars would provide an outline of the data that's required for a registrant to sign up in all 50 of those scripts, or 20 of those scripts, and then would the registries then have to accept and make provision for all of the scripts that its registrar provides, or would it require further transliteration, translation down to maybe 10? And some of that bears on cost too, but I just don't know that I've seen that ever dealt with in any of this.
Right. So I think that you brought up an important question here is, so let's suppose there's a need for, 150 languages inputted in their native script, let's say 50 of them. The question is, maybe a registrar may be only willing to open up maybe, 5 or 10 of these scripts and does not allow the rest. Is there something that we should be concerned about, or no? It's almost, does that make sense? I'm.
This is Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think you phrased that in sort of a negative, but my perception is that what we're evolving to is a scenario where the user gets to use the local language that he is most comfortable with. Registrars get to determine which markets they want to serve, where a market is, you know, uses of certain language. And registries need to be able to disambiguate among any of the languages that the registrars, you know, will support, so that the registration data can always be at least identified with and associated with the language that was used to originally submit it. And that's the minimum constraint that we've applied in what I understand we've done over the past months.
Right. I think you phrase it in a much more positive manner than I do. So I'm going to use your word. Are there any other comments on this point?
Yes, this is Bob Hutchinson. I agree with Jim's previous summary. I would change the beginning of this where it says, while not within the remit of this working group, to choose what is the best model. Definitely change the sentiment to that, is to refer to the models and that there was no consensus rather than the words that are used here.
Thank you, Bob. I guess I will strike this sentence completely. And I'll rephrase it using the language I think that Jim and Steve and yourself referred to, as we tried, but we couldn't come to consensus. Do people agree with that?
Yeah, Steve Metallis, I agree with that approach.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
I guess the other, Steve, this is Bob again. I wonder whether there isn't around what Dave just outlined. I wonder if there isn't a consensus that is emerging about how this data has to flow in terms of its sourcing and I believe the way Dave outlined the constraints of the system, we as a group, I think, acknowledge that that's what we have to operate within, and I'm wondering whether we couldn't use that as a basis for how this is written in terms of the recommendation here, or recommendation of subsequent policy. But maybe Steve Metallis could speak to that as to whether that's acceptable.
This is Steve. I'm not clear on what you're suggesting. What would you suggest that we say is the consensus?
That the data is sourced by the registrant, and that the I guess if I had to characterize what Dave said, is that the data is sourced by the registrant. The ability to enter scripts and languages is constrained by the registrar and the registry, and that those policies, which exist ad hoc today, probably will exist in a future system, and those are basically what we have to go forward with to shape the policy for the future.
Yeah, this is Dave. The only thing I would change from Bob's summary of what I said is that the registrars actually aren't constraining. They are choosing markets. So there may be some registrars who deal with, use borrowing from the local news, 250 different top-level domains. And they may choose because they do so to offer, you know, offer languages and scripts, you know, in the numbers of hundreds. Whereas someone else who only deals with a very small population and doesn't see the need may say, if you want to register through me, you're only going to be able to register using Spanish and English. And that's the choice of the registrar, because he's the one who actually knows his market. So I don't see that as a constraint. I see that as a market decision. And the registrant is still served because if he wants to register in Spanish, he has the choice of the second registrar I mentioned and the first registrar. But if he wants to register in Urdu, he's got only the choice of the first. The registries simply have to have some information that is associated with the registration data that allows them to identify language and script, as we said earlier. But I don't see that there is any real obligation on the part of anyone in the past that to provide transliteration or translation at this point. All we're doing is saying that these are the minimum criteria that have to be satisfied in order to satisfy the first principle, which was users have the have the right to register a domain in a language that they are that is native and comfortable.
This is Steve Metallis. I think there's a lot of assumptions underlying both of what Bob said and what Dave said that may not always be the case. I mean, a registry could say we'll only accept registrations in certain scripts. They don't have
exactly. Scott Austin here. Everything. Sorry, but I agree 100% with what Steve said.
It's not a requirement.
I'm not making a requirement, Steve. If a registry chooses to add a filter or add a requirement, that's fine. But I'm saying at the minimum, this is a broad space you have to accommodate. Now, certainly registrars can make the same. Make the same market decisions if there were any technical basis,
right,
or business basis. But I was just saying that, generally speaking, I think that most registries are going to accept registrations in more than one language.
But Dave, registrar's market is essentially a competitive market. But at the registry, at the top level, registry essentially act as a monopoly, right? So if .tld only accept one, say, let's say Latin, and then that's it, then all the data has been going up. There's no way for a registrar to choose another registry because at the top level it's a monopoly.
This is Dave again, and I'm not certain that I view registries as monopolies. I view registries as competitive, as competitors in a market. And if registries weren't competitors in a market, we wouldn't see CCTLD is abandoning the notion of being a TLD for just their country and going off and becoming the world's greatest URL shortening TLD or the TLD of choice for Los Angelians or the TLD of choice for television shows. So, they didn't do that because they said, I'm concerned about my monopoly. They did that because they were concerned about having hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions of registrations as opposed to tens of thousands.
Well, let's add to that the fact that in the unrestricted domain status, you could have one party, one applicant, essentially, that is the registry, the registrar, and they are the same person. So I'm not sure that the monopoly issue is still the same as it was in prior decades before the advent of unrestricted TLDs. This is Scott Austin. But beyond that, I think Steve's point is a good one, that there's nothing driving necessarily a registrar or a registry to allow what we're trying to provide, and I think it's a very worthy cause, that is that a monolingual registrant should be able to obtain access to the Internet, have his own website or their own website, and I think there's maybe a disconnect in that we don't have anything that says that necessarily has to be provided for. We're just essentially allowing what is currently to stand, that is that the market will determine whether or not that registrant has somebody who's asking for registration data in their language.
Hello, this is Steve.
Dave,
Dave, let me, sorry to cut you short. I think all of these points are very valid. In the interest of time, I was wondering, this is kind of an important point. How do we include things like this in the final report? First of all, should we include, you know, what we discussed like this in a final report? And if we do, we probably have to go on the mailing list to articulate the point and make sure that we have some consensus on that. So that's my question for you all.
Well, I certainly think that, this is Dave, I certainly think it's appropriate for the report to identify issues that the working group discussed, whether or not we have a consensus and whether or not we have a recommendation. I mean, I think that these are going to be, no matter what we recommended, quite frankly, there will be people who have opinions like mine and opinions like Steve and Jim. So I think it's worthwhile capturing the dialogue, because people won't have to start from scratch. One of the values that this working party has, can bring to the community is laying bare a lot of the issues that are not quite obvious to people who immediately think, well, why can't it all be an ASCII, or immediately think, why don't we just abandon ASCII entirely? No matter where you stand on the spectrum of how the models work and what should be done next, we've covered an enormous amount of ground in a year in terms of coming to understand a lot of the issues that are not very obvious.
Okay. So I see Dave proposing for adding capturing discussion and adding that into perhaps maybe in the findings section. What do others think?
Yeah, this is Bob Hutchinson again. I guess given the time constraints we have and obviously the various positions that we have been voiced this morning, the best way to deal with this is to have people propose how to rewrite this section on the email list and then discuss, come back to the discussion next time. But it's, without having an alternate text in front of us, I think it's, the discussion is just going to be reiterating all the stuff we've been through before.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Can I take that as an action item that that some of you are willing to produce some text, maybe a paragraph or two of this nature, and to incorporate into the report? Is that a fair characterization?
Sure.
Okay. So, Dave, you're going to produce some text, and maybe Steve and Scott, you can add some text to Dave's text. Is that possible?
I'm happy to. This is Steve Metallis. I'm happy to take a look at it.
This is Scott Austin, likewise.
Okay, thank you. All right, so in the interest of time, let's move on. We have a couple minutes left. Let's look at the last bullet in the finding section. We recommend a subsequent policy development effort to examine these issues. The working group offered the following suggestions based on past deliberations. So there's a couple bullet points there. Are there any additional bullet points to add there? Is there a need to change, correct any of these bullets? We're on page 8.
The
Steve, this is Julie. The only question I would make is that I note that you say we recommend. Since this is a finding section,
right?
Shouldn't this fall in the recommendation section? I mean, or we should not use the term recommend.
Yeah, so maybe I got you. This is a finding. Maybe we should strike the first sentence and then just say the working group offered the following suggestions based on past deliberations. Or just maybe make it more factual. Just the working group, I'm just trying to invent words on the fly. Something like basically capture what we discussed in the past on these. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, Steve, this is Julie. I think if you keep it as a factual discussion, then it can appropriately fall in the findings section. And
so yes.
That first sentence and adjusting the terminology accordingly.
I think so. I think that's a good one. I think when we have the report written, we need a fresh eye to make sure that findings is actually findings, what we discussed. There's no recommendation in that. Thanks, Stuart. Go ahead. Did I hear someone trying to speak?
Yes, this is Bob Hutchison again. I'm curious as to why each one of these recommendations is precluded by ICANN staff and not the GNSO.
No, we're not at recommendations yet. When we get there, I can explain more. So, are we ready to go into recommendations? Bearing once, twice. Okay, so let's move into recommendations. Bob's question is, why is ICANN staff to develop? Yeah, I guess
we have discussed these recommendations.
Right.
But we've never discussed who's supposed to do this. And
right.
Guess we're, you know.
This
no,
is
I guess
we'd
be
I
making
would recommend,
recommendations.
Steve, that you take a look at the current version of the policy development process. You know, the process is being revised. It's out for public comment. I think it's set to be completed fairly shortly because there is a very well-developed and defined process for how the community and the GNSO in particular, since that is the policy group, looks at developing what could become a policy. And it's actually, I think you have it, I think the first step is an issues report, so that would probably be the first recommendation. And, you know, and then what comes from that issues report might be a data model or something like that, you know, and it's, at any rate, there's a very set process, and thank you, Bob, for raising that. I think we really need to reference that.
Okay. So Bob, let me ask you a substantive question. Which of these should be GNSO's responsibility?
Well, I believe, you know, Julie can probably elaborate this better in light of what the current policy development process is. But that process, we need to hook into that process and clearly define whatever recommendations we're giving as a group.
Right.
As to how it connects to that process, okay?
Okay.
And so I guess that's my point, okay?
Thank you, Bob. This is Julie. Steve, I don't think that's an answer we can give you just right off the fly. I'll send you the link to the policy development process as it currently stands. That should make it pretty clear to you. For instance, it's not ICANN staff ICANN staff may develop an issues report, but only in coordination with, you know, GNSO Council or so on and so
forth.
So that we can help to pull the language out based on what that process says, because it is very specific. And I think you'll see that it will map to, you know, to these recommendations.
Okay, I think that makes sense. So
again, Steve, I guess as much as possible, I would make the recommendations make sense without ingraining them too much in that policy development process, if that's possible. In other words, the recommendations, like the first recommendation, you could probably rephrase to that the community needs to adopt a model for domain registration data. That model should include a formal data schema that incorporates. So, in other words, see what I'm saying is the only thing I'm objecting to is how we're directing the process in the beginning here, not necessarily what the recommendations of the text that is here is. Okay.
Thank you, Bob. And I agree with you. My reason to put some direction is, not necessarily I can staff, but to assign responsibility. Who should actually do it? So would it be possible to do this? That we can, we're going to look into the current policies process and see how's the appropriate process to that this work would fit in. But I was wondering if people could comment on whether these recommendations, the content of these recommendations itself makes sense, and also any additional recommendations that you would like to put on there for the working group as a whole to discuss. Thanks. Oh, and I see we reached the 9 o'clock mark. Julie, what should we do here?
Now, Steve, I would suggest, and others, of course, can disagree, this is Julie, that that you've got information you need to start filling out the report itself and getting some text out there. I'll put out the notes and the action items, and we've got, I think, Steve and Scott, putting some language together that can be included in the text of the report. But
right.
I think the next step is for you to put out, the actual first draft full text of the report so that the group can start discussing that. And I don't know what your timeline is for that, but I'm guessing you probably need a couple of weeks for that before we schedule the next call in order to have the draft of the report out for people to read before the next call.
Yes, I can do that. The only question I have is we haven't gone through the recommendations, so I can write all the way up to recommendations.
My only concern is that we really need to get a written report out there for people to look at. If we wait until next Monday and go through the recommendations, then there's another couple weeks delay before we can have a written report out for people to review, I assume. Realizing, of course, that these recommendations will also be in the draft of the report that you're writing, and we will be asking people to specifically read through that report and comment on it, including those recommendations. So, I'll defer to others as well, but I note that Jim Galvin is on vacation next week, and we might just go ahead and take this time to move ahead and get a written report out there for people to respond to.
Okay, thank you. So I take it, what do people think that I start writing the report and then I also write the recommendations section and then, noting that in the report saying, this recommendation section hasn't been thoroughly discussed. And then once we have the report and all the text in front of the working group, that we engage specifically a discussion on that recommendation section. This way we'll avoid the delay. What do people think?
This is Steve Metallitz. I support that approach.
Well, and Steve, this is Julie. I just want to point out that there are several people on our list who have not been on these meetings discussing the outline. So in any case, I believe we're going to need a couple of meetings to go through the full report and really emphasize that people need to comment specifically on the report, specifically those who have not been on these calls to discuss the outline.
Thank you, Julie. I note that. Okay. So Are there any difference of opinions, or are we all in support of Steve's point of view, Steve and Talis? I guess I'll start writing, and then once we have the text ready, we can discuss the recommendations.
This is Scott. That makes sense to me.
So yeah, this is Bob Hutchison. I support that as well.
Sorry,
okay.
So if I schedule a call for the 22nd, would you be able to have a draft ready before then for members to discuss?
Okay, that's short, but I'll try my best. Yeah.
Even if you had some of it written, I mean, I think to keep this moving, I would suggest that we have a call on the 22nd. If others, unless others agree with that.
I'm okay with that, yeah.
All right, so the next call will be scheduled on the 22nd at the same time. We'll get as much of the draft report out as we can prior to that. Is there anything else we need to discuss on this call? Then thank you, everyone. I'm sorry to carry over, but this has been a very helpful discussion. This call is adjourned. We'll meet again on the 22nd, and I'll send out notes and action items shortly.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
Everyone.